that's fine.
First two were the same group, I think, oh, wait.
I haven't seen any other PWs yet, but everyone I've talked to, like...
What room? Yep, 301.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yep.
I've made a lot of visiting a lot of people in the Central Valley and stuff like,
Sorry.
I did.
Alright, we're ready.
No. Making gas recorders, ready?
What room? 223.
I don't think I did.
223? Oh, go back and then, oh, they changed rooms on me. Yeah.
Anyone know where Korean Mikahel is? Spelled Mikahel, pronounced Michael.
Yeah. Yeah, Fremont kind of area? Yeah. Somewhere,
you're right. I didn't know about the church, though.
I might join you.
Gary is your guy.
Just started?
No.
Wonder if he's the guy that prayed yesterday, I know you weren't.
Well, you were here.
Yeah, he was there.
He was the guy that prayed?
Yeah, with the white hair.
Okay, that was him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so, this church supports Mike Devaney, who worked in Afghanistan. And then Mike moved to Toronto, and before he left, he says, Chris, you gotta meet this guy. He's really rare, because he's a Pashtun believer. He says, that's rarer than a black polar bear.
Yeah. Pashtun?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So you were able to connect with him. Yeah, so we got together a couple times.
Oh, that's cool. So I think I got everything.
Which one are you going into?
I gotta get some water. Harold Trujillo.
Oh, the Hispanics? Reaching Hispanics? Okay.
Yeah. Hey man, I'm Brogan's dad.
Yeah, Chris. Yeah, I owe you.
Okay.
Just look a bit older.
Yeah. So were you able to hear that message by Keller?
Yeah, I got that. Sorry, I didn't answer you.
Powerful.
Actually, I got like 3/4 of the way through, and I thought, I'll listen that night itself. And then I thought, I'll listen to the rest before I reply to you.
And then
I just got distracted. But so I assume that, as far as I got it, it sounds like he agrees with me, or I agree with him.
I haven't read your book. I have to check it out.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully, it'll resonate.
So Brogan had a good time with you?
Yeah. I'm curious to see where that goes. Time you speak and come on.
Yeah.
What are we still not here?
I gotta grab
it. Take it easy.
See ya.
Water.
Thank you.
Hi.
Bring in the water.
How are you?
Good. I'm supposed to introduce you.
Okay, that's okay. Welcome. Where do you want to... You know what? I was trying to see if we can put a table there.
Yeah.
You don't mind?
That's good.
¿Puedes ayudar?
Yes, sí, como no.
Yeah, porque no ven los... Cuando entran los...
People can grab water.
No, not only the water.
Oh, worksheets.
No.
Good idea.
Yeah, thank you. Keep the water here, the handouts and everything, that will be okay.
Great.
I don't want to spill the water here.
No.
If I don't bother.
Oh, yeah. And I got a... sign these.
Oh, okay. Two?
Yes. You keep one, I get the green one.
Oh, okay. I have to do it now or after?
Yeah, now would be great.
Okay.
That way we won't forget.
Okay, now Billy.
This is Los Gatos here, the location of Venture
Tech. Yeah, Los Gatos. Venture.
What day is today? The 26th. Done, man.
You keep that one. I get the green one.
Ah! I signed the room! I even didn't wanna... I'm sorry for that. I had to do it twice, you see?
And then...
I wanted to do it once and I ended up doing it twice.
You're supposed to wear this.
Okay.
No. So that'll record your...
It's start recording automatically?
Yeah.
Okay. So I don't have to push anything.
No.
Okay, good.
They do it.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Then when everyone gets in here, we'll get started. I'll introduce you.
Okay.
So the Universidad de Cali.
Pardon me? Cali.
Cali?
Cali. It's a city.
Valley in Cali?
Yeah. It's a valley.
Okay.
No, valley is the... they put that. Let me see what it says. Oh, no. I studied in the University of Valley in Cali. Valley is the state. Valle.
Oh,
okay. It's like a California State University.
Yeah.
That's Valley University.
I have a good friend who's at Moody right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm doing my grad school at Moody. I'm finishing my grad school. I finish by the end of this year.
Javier Reyes.
Javier Reyes? Are you Reyes? No. Javier Reyes, I think that I, in undergraduate?
Yeah.
Sounds familiar because there is an organization called STUCO, Students Council, and there is another called Latin Bridge.
Oh, yeah?
And he should be there. But let me write down the name. That will be good. So it's your friend?
Yeah. He you know, Hispanic family, but he does not speak Spanish.
It doesn't matter. Javier what?
Reyes.
What's your name?
Chris
what?
Uh-huh.
Oh, what's up?
Here, I have a picture of him right here.
You know, I met someone in the exhibits and they know somebody in Spanish as well. Everybody get the handouts over there?
That's him.
I think I seen him. I got a lady in one of the exhibits that showed me a picture of someone and I took a class with him last year.
Yeah.
And the fall semester.
Yeah. Let me see, I got another picture of him here.
I think I've seen him. He's an undergraduate, that's right?
Yeah.
Okay, no, I'm in the grad school. Oh, but that would be good to meet him because, you know, I live in the city. I live 7 minutes away from the school.
He's always wearing that hat.
Definitely, I've seen him.
Yeah.
I'm gonna talk to him. Yeah, I seen him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. He always wore that. More in Chicago, that is pretty warm.
Yeah, very friendly. But now it's on the look. There's the beauty. There's the chair. You can push it before. No, I'm driving. I'm actually going to get back. I've been in LA to the office.
LA, so
you should have that drive closer, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can get closer because I think it's far away from there. You can feel free to come closer.
Come on, sit up here.
Yeah, I don't know. I was over there on the way. Because you're gonna be translating. Okay. Okay, that's okay. No, he does not speak Spanish.
You know, other than me, you could probably do it in Spanish.
No, no, no. I'm gonna do it. I'm supposed to do it in English. I can't.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe I should go over there and so I can translate into English for him.
The thing is that all transparencies are in English. Yeah. And besides that, let me tell you something. This is a joke, okay? So nobody get offended.
Yeah.
This is to reach Hispanics. So the Spanish has to go to the other session where they can reach Hindus.
Yeah.
You got it? Because this is intercultural.
Right.
We know how to reach our people.
We're looking at how to connect.
I'm just teasing.
Yeah, familia, no? That's not a word.
So what time it is?
You got 2 minutes.
Yeah, I got 2 minutes. That's okay. That was good, that's right? That's what I asked for forgiveness before. And I say it was a joke.
Well, I don't know a few words like Muy Malo. It wasn't Muy Malo.
I'm okay. I'm forgiven by you.
But the Muslim community, the brothers and sisters that are here from that culture, they are saying we the Hispanics should be mobilizing our people into that field because they're because of the makeup of who we are, the way we look, we're more accepted.
Yes, that is true. I have a lot of Muslim friends.
Yes.
Yes, that is true.
Not as often.
One of my friends, he worked in Brazil, Argentina, and they sending workers to North Africa.
Yeah, I know that. And especially Argelia. Argelia speaks Portuguese. Argelia speaks Spanish. It's one of those countries that would speak Spanish. No, it's Angola. I'm sorry. And another country who speaks Portuguese is Mozambique.
Because it was a colony.
I'll introduce you.
Okay.
You're supposed to stand next to me so that it's recorded.
Okay, that's okay.
And then we'll get rolling. Mm-hmm. You have as much time as possible.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, buenos dias.
Buenas tardes.
Muy malo. Okay, glad you're here today. Pastor Harold Trujillo was born in Colombia. He studied sanitary engineering at the University in Colombia, Cali, and in 85 immigrated to the U.S. So he has his B.A. in Bible and Theology from Moody Bible Institute, a youth pastor for two churches, and he planted a church in Waukegan, Illinois in 2000. So currently he's working on his master's degree at Moody Theological Seminary and flock leader of Harvest Bible Chapel in Chicago Cathedral Campus, where he's Hispanic ministry leader. Since 2007, he's been working at the Bible League International as a regional field trainer for U.S. ministry and has been a speaker for the Greater Chicago Sunday School Association in English and Spanish. So we're glad to have him here. Glad you can be here today and learn more about reaching the Hispanic community. I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Chris. Buenos dias. Now you learn. Good afternoon, everybody. How are you? As he said, you know, he made a little introduction. It's one of the things that I also part of the EAN, the Ethnic American Network, which I represent Bible League with the Ethnic American Network. I've been with the network like for 3 years. And when we did the summit in Chicago, I was in the regional committee as well over there. So we went through this last year, and it's a lot of work to put into it, okay? So we're going to start, and what we're going to do, we're going to interact a lot. We're going to have a lot of conversation, because and this is not going to be a theological presentation. This is going to be more practical presentation. The reason is because we had already a lot of theology around with different things and multicultural issues. I've been in some of the workshops. EAN has a lot of speakers on that. But I want to focus in how we practically can reach out the Hispanic people, okay? And I'm going to have some insights from you to reach them, because one of the things that happened to me when they look at me like I'm Hispanic, the first thing that they ask me is, are you from Mexico? I think the best question to ask is, where are you from? Because so many people get offended when you title another nationality. Okay? And I'm not offended, you know. I'm from the planet Earth and I'm a child of God. I don't have any problem with that. But you see some ethnicities and some culture that they're not. They're sensitive to that. So we have to be really careful. So we're going to talk about that. And before I start, I would like to ask you a question. How many of you have a very cultural shock with, especially those of you who are don't speak Spanish, how many of you have a cultural shock with some Hispanics? Briefly.
On the top of the culture, or just chats with them?
Okay, but any cultural shock? Something that you say, oops, sorry.
Shock.
Yeah. You see, that's what I'm here. Any of you? In a different aspects.
The first time my husband and I visited a Hispanic church, they said, we have a Mexican congregation that meets. So we went there, and we were shouting, trying to recruit them to work with us in missions. We said, how many Mexicanos are here? And there were 60 people, only 3 Mexicans. And it's like, well, where did everybody else come from? We had no idea that there was anybody here but Mexicans.
So ah.
That was a real shock for us.
Interesting.
And they were all from someplace else.
Any other person that has any? Yes.
I'm from a nuclear family with mother, father, and 2 children, and I would register migrant farm worker families for school, and there would be 7 kids, 8 kids in this, you know, one room, and the size of the families, it's not as true now, but still most families have more than 1 child. It's usually at least 2 or 3 children that are
with.
Wow. Coming from a family with just 1 sister was like, ooh. I mean, it really surprised me how many people, and who was considered family.
Yeah.
Everybody was your family.
Well, I was in Oklahoma like 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, I don't recall. I was in an institute called Literacy and Evangelism International. I was taking a 5 weeks extensive classes on literacy, because that's part of the things that I do in the U.S. with Bible League International. And we have the first day, it were like 13, 14 people from Africa, from India, from Eastern Europe, from here, U.S., and I was the only Hispanic, okay? So one of the beautiful things, that one of the person who introduces and do the cultural, you know, communication and everything, the first thing that she say, what kind of cultural shock we have in different nationalities, we going through different places. So people start talking, you know. And the person who was leading the group, of course I'm not going to say the name, but it was a beautiful woman of God, servant of the Lord, but she made a statement which actually was a shock for me. She said this, I was shocked when I went to South America and I went to Lima, Peru, and all the Latinos drive so crazy. What? And actually, I was shocked when she said that. Let me tell you why. As he say, I'm since 1985 over here. I live in a city in Colombia called Cali. One of the beautiful things of that city at that time is that people respect the traffic signals. They were very respectful at that time, and say, okay? So one of the things that shocked me when I came to U.S., to United States, is when I went to New York. People are crazy here. They don't know how to drive. That's a cultural shock for me, number one. Number two, I saw a lot of homeless. I didn't see a lot of homeless in my country, or at least in the city where I was. You see? And number three, and this is more shock for you too, it was a lot of racism here. So that was a very cultural shock for me. Because in my country we have Indians, white people, brown, black, and we get along together with no problem. The same country, we don't have any problem with racial and color issue. So that was one of the shocks that I have over here, and that's really interesting. But anyway, talking about cultural shock, a long time ago I'm making this introduction so you can laugh a little bit. A long time ago, probably 10, 15 years ago, I don't remember how many years ago, I was living in Chicago and I went to visit my brother in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and New York because they live in different states. So I almost, for the Labor weekend, I took a Thursday or Friday driving and come back in my van. So I had my own business, so I had the flexibility to come late or departure early, whatever. So I went to a very small town to put some gas. And there was this kind of Burger King or McDonald's, I don't remember what was it, the fast food. We went over there, the kids wanted something, you know, and I was with my niece and I was with my kids and my wife. We went over there, so they ordered everything. And when the lady, very country girl, you know, country style girl, she asked me, what do you want for you? I would like to have a cheeseburger without cheese. Excuse me? You want a hamburger? Yeah, no, I want a cheeseburger without cheese. And she was shocked. Of course, I was teasing her, you know. And I told her, you don't understand my English? No, she called the manager. The manager came over. I said, yes, sir, can I help you? I said, I need a cheeseburger without cheese. And he looked at me and said, look at the picture. This is a cheeseburger. This is a hamburger. The hamburger doesn't have any cheese. The cheeseburger has cheese. So, she very patient, the manager. So you may want a hamburger. He said, no, I want a cheeseburger without cheese. He say, I don't know how to do that. I tell you how to do it. Okay? Give me a cheeseburger, and when you bring it over here, take out the cheese. That's a cheeseburger without cheese. So it was just a joke, but look at this. I have behind my kids, and you know how they feel. Daddy, you embarrass me. How you do that? But the thing is, you know, what I want to try to do with this is to teach my kids how sometimes the perception is different because you have a different accent. You have a different accent. I was living in Chicago, like I've always been in Chicago, live in New York too, but I went to Iowa. Actually, I went to Galena, Illinois. It's a beautiful place to go. That's where the President Ulysses Grant was born. And I went to Galena, Illinois, very good, historical and beautiful place. And I went over there, and we went to Iowa, which is East Dubuque. It's really close. It used to be the dry state a long time ago when the issue with liquor. And went over there. And I experienced racism over there, but I really didn't pay attention. I went to a restaurant, it was open, it was people inside, and they didn't allow us to get in. They told me there were no tables. My wife was really mad. I said, don't worry about it. I was a really, really a new believer. That was a long time ago, probably 25 years ago. So we went to another place, to another restaurant, but I remember my pastor taught me about a love for Christ, a love your neighbor, and all those things. And I stick in my mind that. So we went to a restaurant that was in a little hill. It was like a restaurant bar, something like really weird thing, but we went over there. And as soon as I walk in with my wife and my daughter, everybody turned their eyes on me and my family. So we just walk in. We sit down. It was a buffet. We get over there. And we sit down. And my daughter start playing with all those old folks over there. It was some elderly people start playing with them. And they were saying, you're doing this to my daughter. And I start talking to them. And now, environment relax. Just through my kid. That was really interesting. Now, cultural shock, yeah. Probably they don't have a relationship with any Hispanic at that time over there. Because they were not. Believe me, I look different. And sometimes we are aware of what? Of the unknown. We are a little bit not aware. We are have fear of the unknown as well. Okay, let's talk about something. Let's talk about this verse. And I would like to get a contextualization of this verse. You know what happened? Jesus was over there talking to the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and they asked him in the previous context, asked him about the resurrection. And you know, the Sadducees did not believe in the resurrection. The Pharisees believe in the resurrection, and they got it. The Pharisees said, no, we're not going to get into that. So, in the context before this verse, I didn't want to put the whole verses over there, but I want to read it. This is the easy-to-read version. This is one of the versions that we have in Spanish, in English, in Spanish, and in 32 languages. Bible League produced this version to make it easy to understand a new believer or a person who doesn't speak normally the English. And I'm going to read it just from the verse 34. It says, the Pharisees learned that Jesus had made the Sadducees look so foolish that they stopped trying to argue with him. So, the Pharisees had a meeting. Then, one of them, an expert in the law of Moses, asked Jesus a question to test him. He said, teacher, which command in the law is the most important? Here is the answer. Jesus answered, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and most important command. Now, remember, what was the question? What was the question that the person asked?
What is the most important command?
What was the most important command? Akal. Now look at this. Let's continue. Jesus answered the question, but also he gave him more. And he said, and the second command is like the first. Well, why Jesus answered what was the second? He only asked him what was the most important. He didn't ask what's the first, the second, and the third, because there were 10 commandments. He was only, what is the most important command? The most important command is, of course, God. Okay? Honor God. Love God with all your heart, with all your mind, with all your strength, with everything. Yeah, but some of the commandments are related to human relationships. So Jesus said this, and you have it over there. And the second command is like the first. Love your neighbor. How am I going to love my neighbor? And he answered that too. Because in case if they have something in their mind, say, well, the same as you love yourself. Interesting. Actually, Jesus gave him 3 commands in one that they ask. It is impossible that we can't love our neighbor if we don't love ourselves. This verse has helped me so much to minister to people who have conflicts with another person, and sometimes they're believers. Say, how we can handle this situation? I brought it to this verse. You have to love your neighbor. It's difficult to love. What is difficult to love yourself? Because the word same as is a comparative. So everyone loves themselves. And this is the issue about this. Now let's talk about something. And what is wrong over here? We're talking about being intentional in anything. What do you see over here? Huh? I spell it right. And we're going to argue on that, brother. Okay. Now, there's a lot of people who preach and teach and they do a lot of conference and everything. You have to be intentional in doing this. You have to be intentional. And let me tell you something. Intentional, I divide it and misspell it purposely. Because if you are not intentional, you are intentional. What that means? In, what means in? It's a prefix. What it means in? In what? Inside. What is tension?
Stress.
Thank you. Okay? If you are not intentional, one word with T, you are intentional. You are intentional with yourself. It's not easy to go to speak to a person from another culture, from another language, because you have what? You have some tension inside you. Okay? Once this dot is gone, and the T, which makes a cross, comes in, now you are intentional. And this is something very important. We have to be intentional. I go to a multicultural church. I hang out with Hindus, with people from different nationalities. We have parties. We have, when you say parties, you know, evangelical parties, you know? Don't take me wrong. And we have a lot of things in common. We feed the poor in the city of Chicago. We do a lot of things together. And there is no language barrier. By the way, the other day at Bible League International, they were cleaning up some of the offices, and I found a map from India with all the states. Yeah, this is really interesting. I'm going to take it to Vina and Samuel, friend of mine. He's a nurse, and his wife. So when I went to the prayer meeting, she's in the prayer team too, and I gave it to her on Sunday at 9 o'clock in the morning. Hey, what is this? Eliab, you can open it later. Don't worry about it. You know, they open it later, actually. After the service in the fellowship hall, they say, oh, Harold, thank you. Oh, I didn't know where to get a map from India. Interesting. Cross-cultural, intercultural issue. But now let's remember this. Intentional. Okay? And this is something that lack of us to go through. I have a very good friend in an organization in Chicago called Puitak. Puitak is a Chinese community. And I get a good friend over there, and he is the manager of that community. And sometimes we go with the students from the college over there to learn something. There is a lot of women and men who doesn't know anything about English. There, some of them are refugees. Sometimes they come. They're learning English over there. They're doing a lot of things. But I love to hang out with people from different ethnicity and different languages. So we have to learn that. We have to be intentional, not intentional. Okay? Get out the tension from our heart. Okay? Let's talk about some facts in population. Okay? There is currently, when I say currently, not the 2010, currently 2013-14 is now 312 million population in U.S. Okay? And I get this from Barna Groups. Okay? Out of those is 52 million Hispanics. So we talk about what kind of percentage? 16.67 population. Okay? Now, what we're going to do with all those people? That's right? I'm going to give you some insights, and we know that the number is growing. And I'm going to give you some insights about Hispanic, because a lot of people get confused. What is the difference between Hispanic and Latino? Okay, what is it, Latin America? What is it, Latino? What is it, Hispanic? Okay, look at this. If you go to South America as a missionary, or you go to missionary, and I went just to teach something from Bible League, and I'm from Colombia, South America. And I'm so used to the culture in U.S., when I tell, we're going to do the workshop in Spanish and in English. And I say, en español, inglés. What is español? We speak Castellano. Now, this is something that a lot of people doesn't know. Hispanic is one who speaks Spanish language, by the way. Spanish is not a language. It's people from Spain. The real language is Castellano. Why? Became so popular, the Spanish, that it stayed Spanish language. If we go by the root, right? If we go by the root. Everybody agree with me on that? Okay, now. If you do not, that's fine. And now, who is Latino? Latino is anyone who is or his, her ancestors come under the influence of the Latin Roman language. Now, a lot of people think that Latino have those only who speak Spanish. Well, the Brazilian people who speak Portuguese are Latinos. The Romanian people are Latinos. The Italian people are Latinos. The French people are Latinos. And the people who speak Castellano, they're Latinos too. So Latinos are those people who come from those five Roman languages. You know, it used to be the Latin language, it is almost dead. Only the Catholic churches speak it, you know, in some of the masses that they do. So do you have the Spanish or Castellano, Portuguese, French, Romanian, and Italian? Okay, they're all Latinos. Now, what is Latin America? We talk about Latin America. You see a lot of artists. It's those people from any Latin country of the Americas. That includes Brazil. That includes some of the islands and the Guyana, the French Guyana in South America. Okay, who speak French. So those are Latinos as well. Okay, so let's move on this, okay? I wanted to show you something, which this is taken from the U.S. Bureau in 2008. This is not new. The census for 2010 was not done yet. So why I take this? Because we're going to move forward on this. Now, according to the census, this was the population in the census until 2000. You see? They expected the population to be at 52 million in 2011. Now we have now 52 million in 2014. Now, this is the curve, and they expected by the 2050 will be 132.8 million Hispanics in the U.S. It will be the largest of the minority, okay, which actually currently still they are. Okay, so we're gonna talk about the current population trends between 2008, and the reason is because I get this from another source, and you will see that this is important because Hispanic accounted for one half of the nation's growth since 2000. It's growing is a lot. Now, Hispanic growth rate 31%. Was four times the growth rate of the total population, which is 7.8%. So what we're going to do with a lot of Hispanics here? It's interesting, that's right? But that's what it is. Now, they're divided in this in terms in the past decade, Hispanic population, how they have grown. Look at these states in red. You see those states in red? That grows more than 100% in population. You say, well, but Texas, California, Illinois, Florida, they have a lot of Hispanics, but they didn't grow a lot because they already have a lot. Okay? You have to understand that Hispanics are moving from state to state to have a better living, to have a better jobs, to have a better things, and we're going to talk about that later. But this is the shift and the movement that they're doing in all U.S., and that's really interesting. And let me tell you why this is important. Because so many of the denominations are taking in consideration this to start planting churches in those areas where the Hispanics are moving. Now, the most important thing also is that some of the denominations are preparing people and planting churches in those areas because when the Hispanics are isolated from their people that they know, they need koinonia, they need fellowship. Actually, let me tell you something. When I came from New York over here, the person who invited me to church and I didn't know the Lord, I was very devout Catholic. When I came to the first congregation, evangelical congregation, I was invited by a non-believer. The person was attending the church, but he was not a believer. Interesting, huh? So the church has to do its job. Okay? Now, look at this. 69% according, this is an statistic I have over here, this from the Barna Group, which get together with another three organizations, with American Bible Society, National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference, and One Hope. And they made a survey, they made a statistics, they made a research, and this is what they found within the U.S. resident among the Hispanic Americans. 69% of them are residents. Okay? And when I say resident, that includes residents and citizens. Okay? 19%, they're non-residents. And 12%, it did not disclose their the status with immigration. Okay? So this is what they research. Okay? Now, one of the things that we have to keep in mind with this when reaching the Hispanics is take out the veil when we're going to reach it and not thinking that all Hispanics are undocumented. Okay, you know that the government has been making a lot of mistakes deporting people who are citizens because they just look Hispanics. And we know that in the news all the time, okay? Now let's talk about family heritage of Hispanic Americans. What is the percentage of people? Well, 64% are Mexicans, 10% are Puerto Ricans, 5% are Cubans. Now, by the way, a lot of Americans don't know this. We have a conflict in my company the other day about that. It's incredible. So many American companies, the corporate America, do not consider Puerto Ricans like a part of the United States. Puerto Rico is an independent, a commonwealth to United States. So they're citizens of the United States. And I made the disclaimer because that I've been hearing a lot of things and issues about that. So you have 10% Puerto Rican, 5% Cubans, 3% what? Who are they?
Spain.
From Spain, thank you. You see that? This is from Barna Group. I was done April 16, 2014. Very fresh. Very fresh. You can go to barnagroup.com and you will, or barna.com and you can get it. Okay? 2% from Dominican Republic, 2% Salvadorian, and 40% of other, which means other from other nationalities, South and Central America. Okay? So it's a great percentage of Mexicans. We know that, more than 50%. And the reason is why?
Right next to Mexico.
Yeah, it's next. Pretty close. Okay? Now, I love this. Look at this. When they talk about language fluency or proficiency, depending if it's in Spanish or in English, look at this, 48% of them, they're fluent in Spanish. Okay? So they speak it very well. Okay? 28%, pretty well. 16, just a little. And 9% what? Not at all. So you have a lot of Hispanic people who does not speak Spanish. You know what I say to them? Shame on you. That's a joke. Okay. Fluent in English. Out of the Hispanic people over here, 20% are very well fluent in English, not like me. 30% are pretty well, 47% just a little, and 3% not at all. So they're doing their work trying to learn English. And let me tell you, I give a lot of credit for the churches and non-for-profit organizations and parachurches churches that they're doing a lot of work to reach out the communities, the foreign communities, to teach them English. Okay? I work with that. I'm doing a partnership with World Relief in Chicago. They have a lot of refugees from Iraq, from Myanmar, from different parts of the Middle East and East, and we train them to teach them English through a relational basis with a curriculum that it present the gospel in a chronological order. Okay, but it's life to life. You know, Pastor Chip Ingram said today that it was very important, the relation. That's right. And life to life is so important in discipleship. And that's why we, at Bible League, we do that as well. But I'm not here to talk about Bible League. I'm talking about Hispanics, how to reach them. So you have a little bit of understanding how you reach them. These are just facts. Now, look at this. Let's talk about in churches. Okay? Hispanic Americans, a church, the primary language used at your church. Over here, 32%, number one, English, 18% Spanish, here, I'm sorry, and 50% both. So what is the tendency that is going to be a bilingual churches? Okay, well, let me tell you my experience when I was a youth pastor before I planted the church in Waukegan, Illinois. When I was a youth pastor in one congregation, I was forced to learn more English because I know I have an accent, I know a lot of things. So I make a deal with my youth people, I'm going to teach bilingual, but you're going to help me with my English and I help you with your Spanish. Because they start laughing at me, believe me, when I was teaching. That was a long time ago. Because my pronunciation was not right, still is not right. Which I'm proud of that. I didn't miss my accent. But I made a deal with the students, with the teenagers, with the young people, and I told them, hey, listen, I want you to teach the right Spanish, and you're going to teach me the right English. So they stopped laughing. They corrected me. Harold, no, you say this. You know, perfect. Building relationship through that. Now, look at this. The language preference at church. 43% bilingual, 32% English only, 25% Spanish only. This is the use and this is the preference. That's the difference. Okay, now, let's assume that you want to reach Hispanics. Okay, which one are you going to keep in mind? You know, see, if you have both languages, that will be fine. They will feel comfortable over there. Okay? Because even 43%, they prefer a bilingual. The church that I attended in Chicago is Harvest Bible Chapel. Senior pastor is Dr. James McDonald. We have 7 campuses in the Chicagoland area. Leading the Hispanic ministry in the campus that we have in the downtown Chicago. And they want to come, they listen the message through interpretation like my sister is doing there. Okay, simultaneously. We train the people for that. They love it and we have fellowship with no problem. People, because they say, I want to come over here because I want to learn more English. They worship in English, even though if we interpret, well, we don't translate while they're speaking. You have to understand the difference between translation and interpretation. Interpretation and linguistic is like what she's doing right now. Translation is written, interpretation is oral. And a lot of people say, do you have translation in your church? Or what do you want me to translate? How many pages? Okay? Interpretation and translation are two different things. In translation is always written. That's why you have the Bible in different translation. Thank you. Okay? Now, the interpretation are the commentaries. Okay? Okay, let me ask you this question because this is part of that research that they did in Barna Group. What do you think Hispanic Americans add to American society? Raise your hand and give me some insights. And if I have some volunteer who can write me down the things over there, that will be awesome. Right. Hey, oh, thank you, brother. What do you think Hispanic Americans add to American society?
Music.
Music? Okay.
Food.
Food? We tried yesterday, that's right.
Color and spice.
Color and spice.
And good smell. Language.
Pardon me?
And language.
Thank you. Language.
The work ethic. Hard
work
ethic.
Thank you, brother.
Very hard work ethic.
Work ethic.
Love and family.
Thank you. Love and family.
Work.
He is over there already. Anything else?
Community.
Community. Thank you.
Fun.
Fun. You're right.
Respect.
You see? Interesting. Communication could be along with community. Okay, thank you, brother. Now look at this, what the research says. 36% commitment to family. That's why so much big struggle with immigration right now, that they're deporting people and leaving families alone. That's totally the third world war for the immigrants. Family totally being divided. Because that's our major priority. The second one, thank you, brother, you pointed out, work ethic. The third one, cultural heritage. We try to keep that. I think most of the culture, enjoyment of life, fun. Woo! When there is Hispanic, there is noise. Okay? Commitment to faith. 6%. And we have to work on that. We have to work on that. None of this. 8%. That was the research that they did. Do you think that's true? Now that you're a lot of Hispanics in different parts of the country?
Well, the statistic that you shared at the beginning was 1 in 2 births in the U.S. are Hispanic.
Mm-hmm.
That's his family. So we're having all the kids.
Yep. That's right. 1.5 of the immigrants are Hispanic. Yeah, that's correct.
Right. So every birth, 1 in 2 are Hispanic.
Yeah.
That's huge.
That's
exactly. We like that. Even in the financial situation, it's not pretty well, or work, or whatever you want to tell it, you know, within the socioeconomic environment and context, Hispanic like to have a large family.
Right.
That's, you know, I'm the number 8 or 9. Okay? But I'm a first generation, so was not here. Now, let's talk about something, okay? This is a question that I'm going to ask you. Why do you think are they here in general? I put the first one to give you a clue. Because economic and some poverty in our country. So you get people and make an interview, people who come in La Bestia. You know what is La Bestia? The beast is the train who cross all Central America, Mexico, and all that. There's a lot of documentaries about that, which is pretty sad. There's a lot of churches doing ministry with these people because they're trying to kill them, the cartels from Mexico. By the way, a night before yesterday, really interesting, I was watching the news over here, locally in the hotel, and there was a legislator from Mexico saying these words. We don't have any moral. Look at this. Any moral to tell the United States to stop deportation when we do exactly the same thing with the people from Central America. That was tough. Telling the whole Congress. Now, that's pretty tough. Well, that happened, poverty. You had the opportunity to meet any of those people. Oh, I want a better life for my family. And they come over here, they want to work hard. How many of you, by any chance, have any idea how the racetrack works? The racetrack works. Let me tell you why. Because I was shocked with this. Okay. I'm in partnership with an organization called Racetrack Chaplaincy of America, and we do ministry in the Hawthorne Racetrack in Cicero, Illinois, and also in the Arlington Heights Racetrack. But there is a lot of people from Central America and from Mexico that come over. They are the ones who take care of the horses. They live in a space like this. It's, I think, like 2.5 meters by 4 meters. And they have two beds like that, and they don't have any, they only have a shower, and they don't have any kitchen over there, they have a common thing over there, because that's supposed to be only for the people who take care of the horses. But these persons created in the image of God believe so much in the commitment of being with the family that they bring their families and live in that space, sometimes with 2 or 3 kids. That was out for me. In a neighborhood that is very wealthy, when people go and the value of the horses are more than the value of the person. Incredible. Incredible. We're doing reaching out with them. There's economic poverty. People want their families to be okay. What's the next one? Give me another one in case. Huh? What do you think?
Political unrest.
Well, you have them there, that's right. That's what I was knowing you had to know. Well, the reason why I gave you everything that knows and now you're filling out the spaces is because the lack of time sometimes, and I like to share this. Politics, yeah. There is a lot of refugees right now that are coming from what country? What country has the major problems right now in Latin America?
Salvador.
Huh? Salvador. Honduras. Who else? There is another one.
Colombia.
Venezuela. Thank you. Colombia was before, not right now. Now people want to come back to Colombia. Economy is growing a lot. Okay? They come because of family reunion. They have a brother, sister, cousin, whatever, who lives over here in U.S. and they want to go there. So there's a lot of issues why they come over here. Disaster, refugees, you know, the TPS, my brother is from Honduras. You know, the TPS was a great issue with Central America, in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador when it was a Hurricane Mitch. And before, the TPS is temporary, permanent. I don't recall what TPS means. Status, thank you. Temporary, something like the status in terms of immigration. Okay? So people come like that. And some of the people from Venezuela right now are coming like that. They're in Florida, most of them. Famine, persecution. Well, in Colombia, 2-3 decades ago, there was a lot of persecution with the guerrilla and the drug dealers. People come over here. Now that's happening in Mexico. It's pretty difficult. You see some of the documentaries. So how you receive those people who need, first of all, the love of God, and they need a sense of community and family. The other thing is work. And work is not the first one, by the way. Okay? School. So many people, well-educated, come to school. They want to improve their level of education, and they come just to school. Okay? Now, how will you reach them? That's the next question. How will you reach them? We got some samples over here. Okay? First of all, in order for you to reach them, you have to see some commonalities and some differences that the Hispanics have. That's what I told you at the beginning. So many people think that because I speak Spanish, I'm from Mexico. And by the way, so many people think that I'm Puerto Rican, but that's okay with me. I don't mind. When they tell me if I'm from Mexico, yeah, I'm from Veracruz. Why? Because the way how they talk in the coast is pretty similar. Yeah? I was talking to my brother Joaquin, and I was sharing a lot of things about these commonalities and differences within the Hispanic community. Well, first of all, the common thing that we have is all speak what? Castellano. All speak Spanish. That's one of the common things. Okay? The other commonality is family values, including extended family in unity. That's why when you're going to invite a couple to a party in your house, you keep in mind that 15 are going to come. Okay? Very important. History. We had the same heritage from Spain. All come from Spain. That's the reality. Spain mixed with the indigenous people. Indigenous, thank you. Ethics. Work honestly, which we already talked about it. Respect parents and adults. We have a lot of respect for our parents, our grandparents. Now, I read before an article that was, I think was published by one of the Hispanic organizations, saying that we are losing the respect for our parents in this generation in U.S. We are losing the respect for our parents. And because of that, we have a lot of issues with our younger generation. And the government does not help us either, because there is a lot of regulations that you cannot touch a child, because otherwise you go to jail or the DFS take the child away from you. Okay? I was corrected with the ruler here, with chancla, which is a flip-flop. Bah! You know? And over here, the psychologists say sometimes that what? This traumatized the people. But I don't know if I'm traumatized. You see me traumatized? No. And most of our Hispanic. So it's a lot of overprotection on the kids. That the lack of respect for the parents. A lot. Well, the Bible says that we have to correct our children. We don't have to abuse them, but we have to correct them. Okay? Religion, most of them are from Catholic background, and it's tradition. Most of them, they normally do not regularly attend the Catholic Church in their country just for Easter and Christmas. Okay? That's, they're nominal Christians. They're nominal Catholics, I'm sorry. Okay? So that's why it's so important. And let me tell you something. Even within the evangelical Hispanic churches, I have this situation, and I was sharing with some people today and yesterday in the hotel about this. So many people talk really bad and start, you know, trying to diminish what the Catholic Church do and when you come to the Catholic Church to convert it in force. But you know what? I always say this to the people. When I try to gain another Catholic person, I'm so grateful for the Catholic Church. Because the Catholic Church taught me there was a God. The Catholic Church taught me there was a Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Okay? The Catholic Church taught me that Christ died for me. Taught me very principle, biblical principles that the evangelicals have. What the issue was, the relationship with Christ that there was not there. Okay? But when I'm going to gain a person who normally is from the Catholic background, Hispanic or whatever other place, I say I'm so grateful with the Catholic Church. Okay? But I'm not Catholic anymore. And they ask me, why? And I explain them. Why? That's when they open the door. Because the first thing they're going to ask you, why? And the why open the door for you to get in and explain the gospel. How you were before, when you came to Christ, and what he has done in your life after you came to Christ. Okay? Morality, home education, this is really important. Now, look at this. This is important for the Hispanic community. However, when the people come over here, some of the Hispanics, and they start working one job, two jobs, that is going to be lost a little bit. People struggle working. And I just talked to a few people over here in California. They told me, well, I had to have two jobs, otherwise I cannot, because everything is too expensive here. How is it in Chicago? Will you not move there? The thing, because financially and the economic situation is not good, so people have to work one, two jobs, and, you know, part-time, overtime, full-time, extra time, it's all those times, okay? To have, and they don't have time for their family. Okay, and this is be losing a little bit within the context of our community. Education, high respect for teachers, and that starts at home. It is incredible what's happening right now in the schools with the younger generation, because there is no respect. When I was going to school in my country, you know what my mom says and my father? When you get into the door of the school, the threshold of the school, from here to there, your teacher is your father or your mother. Can you imagine how we respect them? High respect. There is respect for the teachers here in our society right now. Teachers are afraid of the students, unfortunately. And nobody, and not everybody, I'm sorry, can afford to go to a private school or Christian school. And by the way, I have values of my kids. And I told him, you are not going to go to a private school. You're going to a public school because you have to be light and salt over there. It's not what the people is going to do to you at the school. It's what you do at home so they can be light and salt in the school. And that's still at home. Some food, they're really similar. And there is some small variations in the food. Okay? So a lot of people ask me, you eat tortillas in Colombia? No. I love tortillas, yes. So it's a lot of difference in food. And let me see some, let's talk about some differences, specifically on this. Geography is totally different. If you're going to try to reach, for example, in a first generation Hispanic, that's over here a long time ago, oh, you're going to have some issues with that. And let me tell you why. For us, we were taught as the Olympic Games, you know, has the five rings that represent the five continents in the world. Not seven. what? That's why when the people call me, when you came to America, I was born in America. I was born in Colombia. Later on, the industrialized countries divided geographically the whole continent of America. That's why I keep saying, when you came to America to me, I tell you I was born in America. I was born in Colombia. Because when we go to school over there, in the first generation, and they teach you there is only five continents. Africa, Asia, America, Europe, and Oceania. Thank you. My sister had a book that we can talk about that at the end, okay? Okay, this is the geography, how we know it over here. North America, Central America, Caribbean countries, and South America. Topography, economy, and politics, they're very similar in some of them, but we're going to talk about there. They're very different in topography. You have a lot of mountains in South America. You don't have them a lot in Central America or in the Caribbean. Okay? The economy is different. One of the poorest countries in whole American continent are in Central America. You have Haiti, which is a Latino country. Eh? Haiti, they speak Creole French. The poorest country, Honduras, Salvador, there is a lot of need. Okay? Politics, well, you know there is a variety of politics. You have democracy, you have dictatorship, you have a lot of diversity in terms of politics. Okay, government, same thing. Okay, and currency is a little bit different in every country, and some of them, none of them share the currency. None of the country in Hispanic America church share any currency. Mexico, you had the peso, in Honduras, you had the lempira, and in Nicaragua, you had the Cordoba, now it's the real, I think, and in Colombia, you had the peso, in Ecuador, it's sharing the dollar right now. It has a dollar and peso ecuatoriano, okay? But they're totally different currencies. Now that we don't have a Europe Communion over there, okay? No, we don't. And food is different. That's why you gotta be careful. We were talking to with Joaquin yesterday, talking about the difference in food within the Latin America and the Hispanic American. And the reason why I tell you this is because when you're gonna try to reach a Hispanic, he got by His grace allow you to speak some Spanish and you try to reach them, never ask them if do you eat tortillas or do you like tacos or you like alcapurrias, which is Puerto Rican, you know, or you like mango, which is Dominican Republic. No! What is your favorite food? Or what is your national food? Something like that, okay? What is the national or the most common food in America, in United States? Say in America, United States. What is the most common food in United States? Pizza? That's Italian. What is the most common food in United States? Huh? Thank you. Any part of the world you go, it's hamburger. Oh, cheeseburger with a cheese. Okay. Okay. Now, this is the three, how they divided the continent, that's what they call the Americas right now, is Canada, United States, and Mexico. And the reason why I bring this geographically is because so many people believe me or not. Oh, my goodness, this is shame. There was an earthquake in Chile. Do you hear the news? Okay, like a week and a half after, there was another earthquake where? In Nicaragua. Some of the news put Nicaragua in Chile. Woohoo! Nicaragua is in Central America, Chile is in South America. My wife is from Nicaragua and she said, oh, these people don't know where we are. Come, honey. Unbelievable. Okay. You have the physiogeography of Mexico, and the reason why I put this over here is because even within the Mexican culture, brother, you're from Mexico? No. From where?
California.
From California. Well, who is from Mexico here? Okay. Now, the people from the peninsula of Baja California and the people from Yucatan Peninsula, they're the same food, and totally different. Totally different subculture. That's the same thing happened over here. You know, you eat, when I went to Louisiana, in 2006. I went to the prison in Angola, and I was a week over there dealing with the inmates with one ministry called Koinonia House National Ministries, and it was a blessing. I went to eat Cajun food. Oh my goodness, that was so delicious. I tried one in Chicago, not the same. You see that? Geographically, it's a big difference. So there is a subcultures within the culture, within the country, so we have to understand that, okay? So we better ask them. We better ask them, because they have a different typical food as well. They speak a little bit different. I've been working a lot with Puerto Ricans since I came to the United States. And since I came to New York, 1985, 86. So I have a little bit accent with the Puerto Ricans. I'm going to explain you that later when I show you the map of Central and South America. Okay, Mexico, the population is 110.6 million currently. Okay, 96.9 million are what? Catholics. So there is a big, big field waiting for us over there. Big mission field. And my sister is a missionary in Mexico now. Probably if we have time, she's going to talk to you a few minutes about it. Okay? 290 Protestant denominations, 8,172 million people are Protestants. That's the statistics. And others, 6.6 million with other denominations, not necessarily Protestant. Okay? Now, a Mexican stereotype. Now listen, I not try to put all the Mexicans in this box. This is how we see each other as a Hispanics. So you understand a little bit, okay? And most of them, they're timid. They're not really outgoing, express out. They're really timid, okay? So they're not really open a lot. So you better understand it a little bit now. Oh, I know a lot of Mexicans that they're really clowns. Yes, that's right. But the stereotype in general, in order for you to understand it, that's how it is. The reserve, okay? Hard worker, who agree with me on that? Woohoo! Hard worker, okay? Large families, we know that, okay? Hospitable, hey, mi casa es su casa. My house is your house. Loyal, yes, they're very loyal. Very loyal in general. Loyal to employee, loyal to faith, loyal to different things, okay? Generous, yes, generous. When talking about, you know, in terms of hospitable as well. Friendly, yes, they're friendly. And they're very religious. They're very religious and they're very Catholic as well, okay? I don't want to leave my Catholic church because that's the church of my parents. And that's something that we have to work with that, okay? They like sport. Yeah, what's the sport that they like most? Soccer. Actually, I tell you soccer so you can understand. Because for us, it's football. Okay? And that's real football because it's played with the foot, not with the hands. Okay? Why you play over here is handball. Oh, tell me about it. I joke with my people in my church a lot about this. Because we have something similar in South America that they play now in Australia and New Zealand, which is the rugby. And actually the football came from the rugby. You know, you know the story about that. Okay? So they like soccer. Now let's talk about the Caribbean countries that speak Spanish. You have over here Guatemala, Belize, Honduras, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Panama. Panama used to be a state from Colombia. And there was, I'm from Colombia, I was one of those. There was a stupid government that they sold Panama, okay, to the United States for a debt, and now they built a canal, and now we lost. Okay, but we love it. Actually, most of the Panama, people from Panama, they still, the old generation, they still feel they are Colombian. Interesting, okay? Now you have over here Cuba, which is the big island, our friendly state, okay? Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico. These are the countries that speak Spanish in the Caribbean. Now, there is a totally difference of personality and everything with the people from the islands. It's interesting. That's why you can get confused pretty easily. But we're not gonna go for the... When I say Hispanic Caribbean countries, I'm talking about this, okay? Caribbean countries, okay? Because this side in the Pacific Ocean, they're totally different than the people from the Caribbean. But let me give you an example. For example, this is Colombian coast, this is the Caribbean. The people are really like Cubans, Dominican Republicans, or Puerto Ricans. Here in the Pacific Ocean in Colombia, they're more like Afro-Americans. Totally different. Okay? Now, you got the Cuba, Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and Central American countries with Caribbean sea coast that I explained it to you. North Colombia and Venezuela, their Caribbean coast, they're considered Caribbeans as well. And characteristics, okay, they're open and hospitable. Like is saying the Mexican, most of the Hispanic people are really open. Now, look at this. That's the difference with the people from Mexico and Central America. They're very loud. They're louder. You think that the Mexican are loud? This is louder. Okay? And party makers. They're so party makers that in the funeral they make parties. There is some parts in the region of Colombia that I went to a funeral. Oh my goodness, there is party there. Food. Everything. You see the difference in culture? They're more relaxed. Speak very fast. That's why so many people come to me and say, I don't understand how they speak. And sometimes the Cubans speak very fast. The people in the coast speak very, very fast. Okay? They're warm. Love it. And the sport that they like most is which one?
Baseball.
Okay? Yeah, we see the great players from where? From Puerto Rico, from Cuba, from Venezuela, from the coast, some of the coast from Colombia, some of the Nicaraguan, some of the Panama, but from the coast, the Caribbean Sea. See? What is the sport of the other ones in Mexico?
Soccer.
Football. Thank you. Now, you got the Central American countries. I already named it to you, and I'm going to spend so much time with you on this, but let's get some characteristics of this, okay? Belize, Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, and Panama. What the characteristics? They're really shy but hospitable. They're really hospitable, okay? Analytical and very distrustful, some of them. Why? I don't know. This is more or less the stereotype, okay, in general, but they're good workers. They're good workers. Very good workers. They have similar food. All of them. Very similar food between Guatemala, Nicaragua, and El Salvador. Very similar food. Even Costa Rica. Actually, my wife is from Nicaragua, and they have a typical plate called Gallo Pinto. Gallo Pinto is rice mixed with beans, which is the red bean, but the small one. Not the kidney bean, but the small one. And it's really delicious. You know, and I have a friend who is from Costa Rica. They say the Costa Ricans say that that's the typical food from them, but it's from us, and they start fighting for that. Why? Because the food is pretty similar, very similar. Similar topography. We talk about that. Most of the country had a very similar topography in Central America. Sports: soccer and baseball. So that's the sport that they practice a lot. Okay. Family oriented, yes. You see, all the Hispanic are family oriented. There is no doubt about it. Okay? And now we go to South America. And I gonna take you to the promised land. Just this. Okay? And I see, South America is pretty big. It's very big. And you see, Brazil is the third largest country in the whole Americas. Okay? But to give you an idea, and there is different languages also they speak over there. In Central America, basically speak only Spanish, Castellano. But in South America, there are different languages, and we're going to talk about that. Okay? We have Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Ecuador, French Guyana, Guyana, Paraguay, Peru, Suriname, Uruguay, and Venezuela. Okay? All those countries are from there, and probably you never heard about some of those. Okay? Now, what are the characteristics? They're cheerful and hospitable. Different languages. Spanish, French, English, Dutch, and Portuguese. Oh, a lot of people don't know that some countries in South America, one country speak Dutch. Okay? Actually, in the Caribbean, too. This is the Curaçao and Aruba, what they call the Dutch islands. Okay? Some distrust, too. They're very distrust with people. Sports, that expand a little bit more. You have soccer, football, baseball, some in some countries, basketball, and volleyball. Actually, you see some of the players in the NBA over here from Argentina. Mm-hmm. You see that? And they're very good players. Okay, the basketball, Brazil has a great team in basketball as well. And Argentina, I think they've been champion of the world. There is another sport over here that they didn't put, but the only country who practice it a lot is Argentina, which is rugby. They practice rugby a lot, and they have a very good players in rugby, okay? And polo as well. They're good workers and entrepreneurs. They like to start new things. So they're really, their mentality is, I don't come over here to work for somebody else. I want to come over here and I want to work for myself. It's a little bit different. Okay, and food varieties. Totally good, because it's so many countries, so many regions, even so different. I was talking to Joaquin the other day, and I was talking about the experience that I have in Colombia. And when I went in 1994 or 1993, I don't recall, to Bogota, I'm from Cali. Bogota is the capital, totally different culture, totally different people from Colombia, both. And I'm in the place where I am in Cali, when we say tinto, tinto is a little cup of coffee, like espresso, a little bit bigger than espresso, but it's not strong. It's light. You know, it's Colombian coffee, we drink it light. We don't drink it strong. So we call it tinto or cafecito. Cafecito, tinto. So when I went to Bogota to go to the embassy in U.S., that was the first time, I went over there, and while I go to the embassy, I went to the restaurant, and I asked the lady, can I have, please, un tinto? And I said, okay. She went. And I saw that she was bringing coffee to some of the tables. What is my tinto? You know? And then nothing happened, you know? And after that, when probably 10 minutes or 12 minutes after, I made the order, she come out with a scrambled eggs. And I look at her like, I didn't order this. And I say, you asked me for a tinto. That's what it is. Same country. Totally different food. One was a beverage and the other one was food. Right. Huh? Incredible. Because food varies a lot, depends. You know, in Peru, you want to have a really nice food, fast food. We don't have a lot of fast food. We really want to have a very good seafood, and ceviche is very known Puerto Ricans. I'm sorry, Peruvians. Okay. Good churrasco and steak, Argentina, Brazil, Colombia. Okay. They have a very nice steaks. So there is a different variety. Arepas, you know, something made with corn, a little bit bigger than a tortilla with cheese inside. It was really good. Okay. But anyway, there's totally different variety of food. That's why it's so difficult to say, you in South America eat this. No. So when I went to Bolivia and Peru, I had to ask, what is this? Totally different. And topography varies. A lot. So it's a very, because you know, in South America, you know, the Andean mountains come over. And actually in Colombia, in the south of Colombia, they divide it in three. So you have the east, the west, and the central, you know, mountain. So it's really very, very variable, the topography. It's very weird. And we're family oriented as well in South America. Now, how we can do an effective outreach? And you have the notes over there, we can go. Well, be honest, okay? Don't be honest, be authentic with the Hispanic. They love authentic people, believe me, they love it, okay? Be authentic. Now, the other thing is, up and up first. You have a communication with it. Because sometimes we are used to people to tell us things from them, but we don't want to tell anything about ourselves. Actually, this is one of the greatest tools that we have in discipleship in our church for life-to-life discipleship. Okay? I remember when I was doing a training in a church in Chicago, and it was one guy who was in charge of evangelism in Chicago. He was from Guatemala, the big church in Chicago. And he told me, Pastor Harold, I'm getting a hard time because in summer, I go to the lake from... We do a lot of distribution. We meet a lot of people. They give us name, phone number, the address, and you know, and we ask them to open up, and they give us the phone number, the address to visit us. But you know what? We call them. This is a disconnect number, and we go to the house. It's a different address. Like, okay, bro, let me ask you a question. Did you give the person your phone number and your address? No, but I don't know him. Why he has to give it to you? So you want the people to be open to you, but you don't want to open to them. So this is the opposite. You open to them. You know, that's why so many people say, well, how we can bring people to the church? I don't know how, because the Bible doesn't teach how. But the Bible teach how the church had to go to the people. That's why go and make disciples. It's the church going to them, not they coming to the church. That's the reaching out. Any community. Any human being, any neighbor that the Lord talks. So open up first. That is really important. Build rapport with them. Been amazing. Amazing. I'm building rapport with a couple Nepalese that lives in my building. Awesome couple. Young couple. And I already invited him to my small group. He's in the same building. He told me that this Tuesday he's going to go. Because he studied accounting at Northwestern University. And he drives a taxi in the evening. And now, he told me, so I got his phone number, I'm going to call him. Little rapport. Share your fears. We're not the only fearful people. Everybody has fears. Okay? Invite them with family. That's important. You know the value that has, it is an honor for a Hispanic when you invite them to your house. It is, why? Because we have that as a high value. And now when the Hispanic people invite you to their home, go. Because that's a high value. That you build so much rapport with them. Okay? Visit them. This is something important. Visit them. Remember, they're like family, koinonia, fellowship. And it doesn't matter. When I was in New York studying English, I was 2 years in a community college and I knew how to write, how to read. I love it. But my problem is like still, you know how to speak it. I don't have any problem with that. I don't have any fear. I'm not ashamed of that. I'm grateful because when I was studying English over there, I said, well, I got to do something. So I have my own business over there. So I decided, well, I'm going to work in a restaurant the nights and weekend. And I was decided to learn English fast, but to practice it, to communicate my English with the best way. I got a friend who was an electrician. He worked for a guy who was Portuguese. So he had a restaurant. He was an independent contractor. And he told me, hey, you know, my friend Arlindo, he has a restaurant. Why you don't go? I tell him, you're looking for a job. Yeah, wait, whatever. I need to practice my English. Because a beautiful American woman, like a 60 years old who was teaching me, she told me, Harold, don't be afraid to talk. The only way that you're going to learn is to talk. And if people mock you, don't pay attention. You're going to learn. So she encouraged me a lot. So I went to the restaurant, you know. I started working over there. They gave me the job, working on the weekends. It was really nice. I was happy. So I started noticing that all the co-workers were Portuguese. And most of the clientele were Portuguese. So guess what? I learned how to speak Portuguese even if I didn't know how to read and write it. Well, really, it's easy. Okay? So I learned Portuguese first than English. That's why at Bible League we have a program who teach the churches how to teach people how to do an English language ministry with conversational skills, no grammar. Because when you are a child, when I'm a child, the first thing that we learn was what? Speak. Now they send us to school to learn how to read and write. But over here is the opposite. You have to learn the verbs. Hey, you're not going to learn that. You need to know how to speak first. That's the dynamic for linguistics for any human being in any part of the world. Okay? And effective a rich play sports with them. We have a soccer league to gain the people to the church. And believe me, that works really good. Okay? attend their family gatherings. That's important. I already talked about that. Ask about their place of origin. Where are you from? Okay. Don't ask them, are you Mexican? Are you Puerto Rican? Are you Cuban? No. Asking, where are you from? Okay, if I come to my brother, because just have the some faith that they're Oriental, if I come to her, where are you from, Mongolia? Oh, probably he get offended. If he's not. You understand what I mean? We have to, there is a lot of sensibility on those things. I was in a mission trip with Moody, Moody Bible Institute in Europe with five countries, and I was one of my teachers, Dr. Fazer, and I was taking a class with him, and we went to London, and we went to a restaurant, and we have 32 people in the restaurant, and the waiter came over, and you know, they serve wine. That was part of the treat. They serve wine because they drink wine over there, and Dr. Fazer, excuse me, can I have a glass of water? And it was very mean, very arrogant, the waiter. Not the waiter, the waiter. So he said, excuse me, I can understand what you say in that British accent. So I got it. So I was besides Dr. Fazer. I told him, my professor wants a glass of water. Oh, thank you. This is what he say. Very mean. These Americans don't know how to speak English. Wow. Wow. Very mean. Can you imagine if that person is evangelical and trying to reach someone? Wow. Listen to their stories. Oh, we love to tell stories. We love to tell stories. So listen to their stories. We love. Listen, one of the things that I have a better relationship with my kids is because we keep telling the stories for my country. Make a relationship. So this is one of the love their family. Okay? They feel love and they're going to have a better relationship with the person. And pray for them. This is really important. Pray for them. It doesn't matter if the person is evangelical or not. I always pray for people that doesn't know the Lord. And that's an impact for them. Pray for them. Okay? Pray for them. I was involved in the public schools with my son was, and I get a part of the committee, the Parents Advisory Committee. I get involved in the schools, and I start developing, you know, some computer classes and everything, and with some money that the Title I funds give for the No Child Left Behind program for parents' involvement. So I get work on that, and when we're going to bring the computers and everything, I ask the parents, okay, none of them were Christian, just me. And my wife, I would like to pray for what it's going to bring and the success that this class is going to be. Now we start having problems or parties in the houses of birthday. They call me, Mr. Trujillo, can you come and I would like you to pray for my daughter, for my... We gain some of them for the Lord. Pray for them. They like it. They love it. Okay? Create ministries like English, immigration, human trafficking, finances, etc. English. Teach English classes to them. Conversational English. Don't teach too much grammar because some of them don't even know the grammar in their own country. Okay? That's true. Teaching conversational English. Practical, functional in society. Teach them about immigration. Teach them about human trafficking. Be careful because there is a lot of human trafficking going on. Chicago has the highest rate in human trafficking. Woo! Incredible. Teaching about finances. They need to know. Respect their culture. They study their culture as well. Okay, that's very good to know. Actually, when I'm going to travel and when I'm going to stay in one place, what I do, I go, it's a little easy now. It's very easy now to go to a Google and search whatever culture you are. Mm-hmm. Start searching. You're going to meet with somebody from another country. You start reading something about their culture. Like, hey, I read this is, immediately they open up, identify, because they're talking about and they're listening something that they by their own. They love it. Okay, do not laugh at them. This is really important. Okay? And then, nobody likes that somebody laugh at them. Value them and honor them. This is important too. Okay? What tools do we have? Okay, the written word of God, and we have the Holy Spirit. This is the tools that God provided to us. You ask God for wisdom, give them some good biblical verses. Proverbs is a good source. Okay? We have a delegated authority in Matthew 28:18. Why we get a delegated authority? It was given by Christ. Okay? We have a word plan. Go to all nations and make disciples. And we have a promises from Jesus who say that he will be with us until the end of the world. We got this. We have a delegate authority, we have a work plan, and we have a promise. Now, if you believe what the Bible said in Isaiah, that the world won't return empty, and if you have this, you have to believe God, the promises that these people are going to come to Christ. Don't try to convert them. That's the job of the Holy Spirit. Don't try to. Don't try to force them. Let them pray for them. Pray for them. You know, go with the Word of God. You have that authority. You have a work plan. You have a promise. And that's so important. Okay? So now, let me give you some tips about the ABC of witnessing. Very simple conversation. I always have this, the ABCDE, the alphabetic order, and that's something that we teach in the Project Philip, which is a program for evangelism and discipleship, using a relational way. And it talks to them about the knowledge of God's love, John 3:16. Everybody knows that verse since you were in Sunday school. Okay, teach about the barrier. What is the barrier? The barrier that we have is that all are sinners. There is a barrier. God's love, but we cannot reach the love because we're sinners. Now, but there is a clear way. What is the clear way? John 1:29 says what? When John the Baptist was already here, is the Lamb of God who take away the sins of the world. So this is a clear way. Okay? Now, they have to make a decision. For all those who believe, they give them the right to be the children of God. And now there is another evidence of hope. John 6:37, that Jesus said that whoever the Father gives to me, I never reject them. It's an evidence of hope over there. So the A, B, C, D, E. I presented this way the gospel to a woman that was going to, I was going to Dominican Republic, she was going to Ecuador, and in the Miami airport, I was talking to them, we chat a lot, but when we talk to the point that the reason why she was going to Ecuador, I tell him, you need to get the Word of God in your heart. There is a promise in God to heal what you're going through. But you have to bring the good news over there. And start talking to her, present the gospel. She came to the Lord in the airport. She started crying. People was running around with luggages. And I was there. I embraced her. Pray for her. Lord Anista, praying for her. She lives in Chicago. Get the phone number for my wife when she came back. And she started attending the small group of my wife. Always. A, B, C, D, E. Simple. Make it easier. Okay? Now, are you going to be intentional now? Huh? Take out the tension. Take out the tension of that. Okay? I was meeting with a guy from Nepal the other day. And there's a lot of Nepali in my building. So I start reading something about Nepal. We had some churches that we planned in Nepal. So I start telling him about some places, Kathmandu, different places in Nepal. And he immediately said, you know that? I said, no, I don't know. I wish I can go there. But how do you know about these places? Said, because our church plants some churches over there. And I start showing him Facebook the page from that they have from the churches. Oh, this is, I know what is this. And he start talking, building a relationship. I was talking to them about their country. And after I say, where are you from? Hell, I told you I'm from Colombia. Oh, yeah, you told me that. You promised me a cup of coffee. I told you. We're going to go to my... Building relationship, building rapport, studying them. So being more intentional, okay? Warning. I always say this. Do not invite them to church. A lot of people talk about paradigm shift. Do not invite them to church. Go to them. You are the church. Okay? You are the church. We have to change that. The thing of evangelism, believing that we evangelize bringing people to the church. No, we are the church. We have to go to them. That's why how to reach out. Now how to reach in. how to reach out people, any nationality, not only Hispanic, but this is applied to everybody. Acts 26:40 is the story about the Philip and the Ethiopian. You know the story? An angel of the Lord, hey, Philip, he was in Samaria, he was preaching the gospel, he was doing miracles, he was doing a lot of things, church was growing, he was very comfortable over there, and the Lord tell him, get out from there, go to a place that is called to Gaza, which is a desert place. When you go to do evangelism, it's a desert place. You have a lot of dangerous things over there, but you gotta do it. Get close to him. Get up in the chariot. You see? There is a lot of things when you do evangelism and try to reach out people. I don't have a lot of time to go through this. Any questions? And we have 5 minutes left. Now, you heard this. For those people who... Any questions you have, by the way? I got my card over here. I can give it to you. You can take one. Okay, I do a lot of training for churches, equipping them to reach out not only the Hispanic, because we have the Master of Spanish, but also for the English community with a relational program called Project Philip. Also, we tell them how to establish an English language ministry doing conversational English. We do that. If you need more information, take my card. Any other question? Any questions you may have, please feel free. Now, I'm going to ask you a question. And I'm going to give you some things. You don't have any question. You know what is the capital of Argentina? Oh, one person. Huh? Who did it first? You? Okay. Who said Buenos Aires first? You have to agree. Huh? You did it? I'm going to give you this Bible, and let me tell you, this is a Bible that we produce. It's easy to read version, and we produce it in 32 different languages for now. Okay? And thank you for answering that. And the reason why I ask you this question is because so many people, when I used to say, I'm from Colombia, they told me, Colombia, what part of Europe or Africa is that? You have to know the geography first, not to be offensive. Okay? Okay? You know what is the capital of Honduras? The Hondurans cannot participate. You know what is the capital of Honduras? Tegucigalpa, my sister. Thank you, doctor, for being here. It was an honor to have you here. Okay? Thank you. This is a very fresh translation of the Bible in an easy-to-read version for immigrant people and for people who come to the Lord for the first time. Don't forget that there is some evaluations over there that you have to have. Okay? We produce this prison Bible. We do work with a lot of prison ministry as well. If you know anybody who works, you know anybody or any of your churches works in prison ministry? None here? You?
I have a friend at church who works at the county.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she works with the chaplain.
Okay, give this to her because I don't want to take this in my luggage. Okay, now if they need more information about that, tell it to contact me. Okay, I got two more books over here. Okay, two more Bibles that I want to give away, but I'm not going to give away this Bible just for free. You have to know something. Okay, what is the capital of Bogota? Of course I had to do a tricky question to see your weight. Okay, those who won already cannot participate. What is the capital of...
I'm just waiting for you to say Mexico, because I'm ready with that one.
Yeah? Are you sure?
Maybe.
Okay. What is the biggest river in the whole continent of America?
Amazon.
You say it, bro.
Yeah,
I didn't ask you Mexico because that was too easy. But that was easier. Okay. Now, let me ask you another question. Okay. Where the Chibchas are from is a tribe. Chibchas. C-H-I-B-C-H-A-S. Chibchas.
Colombia.
Colombia, by the way, you already had the prison Bible. So, okay. Okay. What? Okay. those who won't don't participate. I just want to give something to those who doesn't win anything. Now, let me ask you a question. What language is they speak in Cusco, Peru?
Peruvian.
No, there is no language called Peruvian. Nobody knows? Okay. I know you know.
Inca.
No, Inca is the Indians. Okay, it's Quechua. Okay? Quechua is the language. Okay, what other language besides Hispanic is the national language of Paraguay? No, you cannot participate. I know you cannot. Because you travel so much, it's easier for you. No, that's Brazil. Guarani. Guarani. Okay. Okay, let's try. What countries used to be called in the 18th century La Gran Colombia? What countries used to have those? You don't know? You said, this is history. That's hard. I know you know. No. Panama was part of Colombia at that time. It was Colombia, Venezuela, and Ecuador. It used to be the Gran Colombia. Of course, Colombia was there. Okay? Now, do you remember what is the bigger libertator of South America?
Bolivar.
Huh? Bolivar. Yeah, but you got already one. You see? I'm trying to get away this for the ones who didn't get anything. But I'm gonna make it one easy. Okay, I'm gonna make it one easy.
Yeah.
What is the only country in South America that has coast in both oceans? I say today. No, South America.
Oh, in South America.
Chile.
Oh my goodness. Colombia, I told you. Okay, where, that's okay, where the Pampa is located?
Chile.
Don't guess, raise your hand first.
Argentina,
brother, yeah, you got it, man. How many didn't get anything? How many didn't get anything? Okay, I have this, only five. This is something the Bible League produces called the Life of Jesus. This is a material where the life of Jesus is taught or narrated in a chronological order with the four Gospels and the book of Acts. This is a material that we're using to reach out to Muslims. Why? Because they love Jesus and they know that Jesus is the prophet. So they love to hear and read the stories about Jesus as well. Also, we are using this in prisons, and we are using this in a different context that we are doing ministry with. Okay? So take away this, one of you who raised your hand, and thank you so much. God bless you. Let's close with a word of prayer. Okay? Father, we are so grateful for the time that we spent together. Thank you, Lord, for the blessings of having different people from different nationalities over here and allowing us to get a little bit of taste of what the Hispanics look like and different regions and topographies and customs and food. And I thank you, Lord, that the opportunity that you gave us to each one of us to know each other and to understand a little bit of the culture of our Hispanics have in a different context. I ask you, Lord, to help them to use these tools. They're not a lot, but there's some tools that they're going to help them to start building a relationship in life to life with some of those who speak Spanish. I thank you, Lord, and I ask you, Lord, to open the doors and to renew their minds and their hearts with the challenge to reach out people from another language or another culture. Help us, Lord, to be intentional and not intentional. Father, everything that we go to do that is unknown to us, it creates tension in our heart. But by the grace of God, by the strength that you give us, I ask you, Lord, to bless all these people that not only here in this room, but in the whole conference, that they can bring something new and fresh to their congregation or their organizations, and we can keep building the kingdom with the diaspora that is among United States and Canada. I thank you, Lord, for this time. In the name of Jesus, amen.